and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We don't often do this, but man, what a great baseball situation we got going now.
Back-to-back awesome games last night.
Seriously, an unreal ending in the MLB playoffs last night. We got LeBron getting ready for his Los Angeles Laker debut this evening, and Steelers running back James Conner will come out here and join
sit
us
right there.
Nice.
In a little bit. So we got a lot to get to, but we...
And baseball was so good last night, let's start with the Cowboys.
There you go.
That's
how good it was. We will start in Dallas with the aforementioned Cowboys, who are coming off a big win over Jacksonville. Some might call it a dominant win over one of the league's best defenses. Now they set their sights on division foe Washington this weekend. So Dallas has an opportunity to share the division lead if they can pull out a win. Ezekiel Elliott talked to reporters yesterday, highlighting the importance of momentum.
I think it was a game we needed. And I said it before, if we don't build on that, then everything we did last week really, means nothing.
All right, CC, what's it going to take for the Cowboys? They haven't had any real momentum, right? They've gone loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. Now they're trying to make it two in a row, especially going up against Washington this weekend.
Well, Jenna, relax. Guess what Dallas is going to do?
Right off the bat.
Dallas is going to come out and like your favorite organization. Well, just like winners. They're going to do what New England does. Instead of coming out running Dak, for 80 yards and giving Zeke 15 to 20 touches, they're going to come out five receiver offense, spread the field, go empty backfield, throw the ball 45 times.
You a damn lie.
Hey, man, what are you doing?
I'm sorry to interrupt you on your opening monologue, but whatever the punchline on this is going to be, I'm lying to the people because I know you're not serious right now. They don't have five wide receivers.
I mean, we wish that the Cowboys would look at some of the things, and New England does it best. So, yes, I'm embellishing just a little bit. But because we know exactly what they're going to do. For them to be able to win, we know Zeke's got to touch the ball 20 times. But what else can we rely on? Last week they'll say, well, Dak running the football. They did some good things. Scott Linehan, offensive coordinator. But to think that they're going to change a whole bunch – they're not like the Rams. They're not like Kansas City. Those teams, we don't know what they're going to run this weekend. We know what Dallas is going to do. They've been very, very predictable. Do we think they're going to change it up like they did last week? Will they have a change up from last week allowing Dak to rush the football? I don't think so. That's their way to winning. It's just a matter, can you stomach it? It's no different than Baltimore in their championship years. Defensive dominant with a running game, control the clock, win time of possession, win turnovers. And Dallas has a great defense. I haven't mentioned them yet because that's what they should be relying on. They shouldn't rely on that offense to try to be explosive. They shouldn't try to rely on 400 yards. Rely on the great defense that you have that is very, very predictable. And then Ezekiel Elliott and his greatness, which is very, very predictable. Dak's got to be able to make some plays with his legs. He's not like these other quarterbacks where we have to worry, is he going to get hit or is he going to get hurt? Because that dimension added to their offense, that's the way that they're going to function. That's the way they're going to have to move the chains. And reality is there's not much variance in what they're going to do.
Washington's a team we haven't talked much about at all this year, but their statistical profile, very similar to the Cowboys. Cowboys offense, 25th in points per game. Washington's, 24th. Cowboys defense, fourth in yards per game. Washington's defense, 5th in yards per game. Like, they are, right, they are one away offensively and defensively
right.
in the
and
rankings.
For most of the people who haven't been watching Washington and aren't familiar with them, they got off to the hot start. Nick and I, we do a local feed to the Fox affiliate in Washington. So, weekly, we do these check-ins with them. Mm-hmm. So, we've been able to keep up with the team, especially Nick. That's kind of his jurisdiction.
Right. Well, even if you're not following the Redskins.
And then Adrian Peterson was looking for me, too.
Exactly.
So I sent Nick over there.
Exactly.
They're still in first place in the NFC East. They should know at least they're doing something right.
Well, that's what I was leading to is they had an early bye week, so they haven't played as many games as the other teams in the division, but they got three wins. Philly's got three wins, but with three losses. The Cowboys have three wins with three losses. Washington's sitting there at 3-2. For Dallas, this is a tremendous opportunity. So they win this week, they could be solo first place on Monday. Philly's got a very tough game against Carolina. So if the Cowboys win this week, they get to 4-3. Washington drops to 3-3. We'll see what happens with Philadelphia. They could be by themselves in first place. So how do they win this week? That's the question you asked. It is not exciting. It is not. There is nothing I can say about five wide receivers. It has to be. We talked about the Jaguars. It has to be the way the Jaguars want to win, but in nicer colored uniforms. It has to be the way the Jaguars want to play, but with a team the country actually cares about. A great defense, an excellent running game, and don't make mistakes on offense. Mm-hmm. Here's the most important stat. I know they're 3-0 at home and 0-3 on the road. Here's a more important one. In the game, in their wins, they have zero turnovers. In their losses, they have six turnovers. This team cannot overcome turning over the football. Some teams can. We talked about Sunday Night Football. The Chiefs had two first half turnovers, and you know what? They were fine because they can go get those points back. They lost the turnover battle in that game 2-1, yet they had it tied 40 apiece. The Cowboys cannot lose. They have not won a game this year where they've turned the ball over a single time.
The casual fan is going to look at this Cowboys team and say, oh, well, Dak ran over 80 yards last week. Just let him run again. That's going to be. Mm-hmm. So should the Cowboys go ahead and put a few 10, 15 designed running plays in for Dak Prescott, at least so that those are like guaranteed successful plays to get their offense going?
Yeah, absolutely. If we go back to Jim Harbaugh and him coaching the 49ers, you can say what you want about your team and everything, but offensively, they were going to get that 400 yards, no matter how they got it. Now, they might get 250 rushing, and their quarterback might have 100 in cap, but you have to know the characteristics, the DNA of your team. And right now, Roger Goodell, people would dispute, he says right now, as an NFL fan, this is the best time to watch an NFL game. Well, some of those teams that are throwing the ball up and down having fun. But if you're watching the Dallas Cowboys, if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, don't get fooled by modern football. You have to play an old style. There's always going to be a few teams every year that they have to forget what's going on in the league and they have to concentrate on what their team can do. And that's where Jacksonville is and that's where Dallas is. And every week, the closer they can stay to that model, playing solid defense, not turning the ball over. Give the ball to number 21. Limit number 4's throws to under 25. That's how they're going to win games. Forget about the noise outside. If they can do that, I think we'll be pleased with how Dallas Cowboys, and I think they'll develop some consistency compared to trying to be like other teams, trying to have 3 and 4 receivers, trying to throw the ball 30 times. They shouldn't do that. That's not their strength. And let's just see what they do when they travel to Washington this weekend.
In the 14 months we've been doing this show, I think your favorite stat that I mentioned was at the beginning of last year, that Zeke's rookie year, he rushed for over 1,000 yards on first down. How telling that was. Mm-hmm. How that led them to a 13-3 record. This year, through 6 games, he's on pace for 1,200 yards on first down.
Okay.
Yet they're 500. They're 3-3. They already have as many losses this year as they did all of 2016. Why is that? Because he's the only part of their offense that they can rely on. He's the only part of their offense that's been consistent. And they didn't lean on him heavily enough the first 3 weeks of the year when they got off to the 1-2 start. They've leaned on him more the last 3 weeks when they're 2-1. Man, run 21 till the wheels come off. Like that is, let Zeke be in a situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let him eat. There you go, Jenna. Let Zeke be in a situation to where in a year from now, Chris Carter's annoyed because we're talking about Zeke holding out because he's worried about touches and workload like Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because he has worked to that level. That is their path. The defense, Jalen Smith, is awesome. He could be comeback player of the year this year.
Yes.
He could be an all-pro caliber player. Remember last year?
Byron Jones, the corner, moved from safety. He could be all-pro. There's not a cornerback in the NFL that's playing better than him right now. So let's lean on those names.
If it's not for Derwin James and Denzel Ward, Leighton Vander Esch would be one of the candidates for defensive rookie of the year. Remember last year, the story was, well, if Sean Lee's out, might as well forfeit. Sean Lee been missing. He might be back this week. He's been missing. They've been fine. The defense is great. Zeke is Zeke. If they get anything from the passing game at this point, it's a bonus. They can beat Washington throwing for 185 yards. They won last week throwing for 185 yards in dominating fashion.
All right, we'll have Mark Schlereth out here in just a little bit to talk much more about this. But on the other side, let's talk some basketball. Are expectations already that high for LeBron James this season? He makes his debut tonight. Next on First Things First. How about this? Coming up later in the show, Steelers running back James Conner will be out here live in studio. That's at 8 Eastern right here on First Things First. Got a lot to talk to him about. That should be fun. We'll get to LeBron James in a minute, but first, a little basketball from last night. Blake Griffin goes up for the dunk. Jared Allen denies him at the rim.
Man, didn't we see him doing this in the preseason?
Yes.
Was it the same guy?
Yes, same guy.
Oh, I'm coming back for you.
No, and you ain't getting it.
Blake gets away with a hook right here with an offensive foul and gets it yammed.
Nets are going to be feisty, man. Almost stole one last night.
Hawks, Knicks. Let me start by saying Vince Carter is 41 years old. Look at the hustle. And then coming back to hit from deep.
You know that's my cousin.
Of course. Vince Carter.
Vince loves to play. Man. Loves to play the game.
And he could have jumped on with a contender. He joined our show. He said, I want to go somewhere I get to play.
Should go to Vince Carter's school of shooting.
Oh, same game. Undrafted rookie Alonzo Trier showing off his explosiveness in his NBA debut.
Look at the undrafted kid.
We saw him at Poly Pavilion playing with Arizona against Lonzo Ball.
100% correct. I forgot about that.
Good addition to the Knicks. I'm excited. I'm going to see the Knicks on Saturday. The Celtics are coming to town.
Oh, okay, see?
Yes, in the garden.
Okay, see, I see you.
Clippers, Nuggets, Boban Marjanovic, 7'3". The wingspan, 7'10".
Yeah, he didn't jump, see?
Seriously?
He didn't jump.
I love the little pause, though, to let us know.
He also, after one of his dunks yesterday, they had to stop the game because he broke the rim.
That is
He didn't rip
ridiculous.
It off the backboard. He just, like, he bent the rim. Boban is a literal giant. Like, he's a giant. Man.
Like he's diagnosed as a giant.
As a giant, it's fun to watch.
All right, finally, bottom nine. Stroh's down two outs, bases loaded. Andrew Benintendi dives, makes the game-ending catch, robbing Alex Bregman of the potential walk-off, and the Red Sox suddenly take a 3-1 commanding series
lead. That play right there might have altered who wins the World Series this year. If Benintendi doesn't make that catch, the Astros win this game last night. And then to me, in a best of three with their starting pitching, they're heavy favorites against Boston. Now they're down 3-1. Boston, Red Sox or Astros still could win the series. Boston probably will. Huge play by Benintendi.
Yeah. Great jump on that ball, though. He took a chance there.
Absolutely.
On to the
Benintendi.
Highly anticipated debut of LeBron James in short shorts tonight. And he'll make his first start as a Laker. And yes, those shorts are hemmed a little short. They're telling me that is the style. Lakers taking on the Blazers in Portland. And new teammates, new expectations for LeBron as he seeks to go to the finals for the ninth straight season. Nick Wright, how should success for LeBron and the Lakers be defined this season?
All right, let me give some very specific things that you'll be able to check back in at the end of the year. And then we can talk about maybe more almost ideas for them. But specifically, you've got to get at least 50 wins. Be one of the top four seeds in the West. Which is going to be tough, because if Golden State and Houston are 1-2, Utah, the Lakers, and Oklahoma City are going to be, one of them is not going to be a top four seed. But to be one of those top four seeds and to advance as far in the playoffs as you can until you play Golden State. So that means that's why you have extra incentive to be the three seed, avoid Golden State potentially until the conference finals. But those are three realistic, achievable, tangible goals. 50 wins, top four seed in the West, and not lose to anyone in the playoffs other than Golden State. Those are all benchmarks that you can grab onto that, to me, would define a successful season for the Lakers.
Yeah, I think 50 wins is a good number as far as where they were last year. If you look at the plus-minus, what LeBron typically has done when he's joined other teams, when he went from the Cavs the first time to Miami, when he left Miami and joined the Cavs, I'm excited to see what he can do. I think it's very, very important. You watch games and you start season, people say, what's important? We'll get off to a fast start. It's not a bailout as far as saying that, that's what everyone's going to say. But when you're playing with a bunch of young players, it's important that they have success. And I've seen LeBron in this exchange of going from one team to another, the team struggle more likely than they get off to a fast start. That's what they did in Miami. That's what they did in Cleveland. So I hope that these young players, that they look at it a little bit different. And with the schedule and being out west, that's going to be hard to do. So I would like to see them get off to a fast start. Last year, we saw Boston Boston did lose the first couple of games, but then after that, man, with those young players, man, they ran off a bunch of games, and I think that helped develop the confidence of those young players.
You guys call it struggling, getting off to, you know, trying to overcome what LeBron did in Miami and Cleveland, but isn't there something to these guys trying to figure out how to play in a competitive setting, figure out timing and pacing and how to all play together? Isn't that a sort of normal? Because they ended up winning in Miami and winning in Cleveland after those starts.
I think this is a drastically different situation, however, than each of those previous two. In Miami, it was about three great players who had always been the best guy on every team they'd been on learning to play together.
Yes.
And the first month of the season, it was LeBron would take a turn, D-Wade would take a turn. Really, that whole first year, that's almost what they did. In Cleveland, it was a team that had never won anything, that had no momentum going in its favor, had just gotten the number one pick of the draft, them learning to win it all. With the Lakers, it's a team that, absent of LeBron, had been on plus nine wins, a positive trajectory, and a team that doesn't have a ball dominant, I don't want to say selfish in a negative way about Kyrie, but a guy who's used to having everything run through him the way Kyrie was. I actually think it'll be an easier transition for LeBron with the Lakers than it was in Miami or in Cleveland, even if right now their ceiling is not as high as what it was for those two teams.
So Luke Walton, the head coach, has said he does want to limit LeBron's minutes a little bit, that this is a long journey, not a one-year journey. What do you guys think about that?
It's an organizational thought. It's like the whole organization is thinking about this, because when you get LeBron at this stage, it's not like any other stage. So you can't use his beginning stint in Cleveland, his stint in Miami, or him going back to Cleveland. No, because in all those, man, he was one of the leaders in minutes. No, LeBron's at a different stage. He's also with the youngest team. And you should be able to rely and put some of those minutes on the back of these younger players. You can't expect LeBron to be able to push the types of minutes and play the type. He played 82 games last year. Why would he play 82 games? Would it be in the best interest of the Lakers? Because the truth of the matter is they're going to need LeBron healthy in year 3 and 4, because their chance of winning a championship probably will be greater than they will be in year 1 and 2.
I think it's smart to try to limit his minutes. I think that's going to be Luke Walton's toughest job, is telling LeBron to come out of a game if he doesn't want to. I don't know how important it is. It's been important for every player in NBA history. But in year 14, LeBron led the NBA in minutes per game and then played in more playoff games than anybody and went 33-9-8 in the playoffs in 41 minutes per game. Last year, he led the league in minutes and played more games than anybody and then played more playoff games than anybody, played 42 minutes a game in those playoffs, and went 34-9-9. So in year 16, can he do something similar? Probably. Will that negatively affect year 18 and 19, which is C's point? That's the math Luke Walton has to do. And that gets to when I said there's intangible things to discuss as well. That's one of the most important things to figure out by the end of this year. Is Luke Walton a high-level NBA coach? I'm not saying he is or he isn't, but I don't think we have any way to know yet. You can throw out what happened in Golden State when was an interim coach there. That team was almost on autopilot.
I don't believe you can throw it out, because as you say, everywhere I've ever been led me to being right here. Every decision I ever made.
Oh, sure.
And just his whole basketball experience, that means growing up in a basketball family, his college experience, being a champion, all those things. So for me, I'm not going to exclude everything. I'm still at the same conclusion as you. I don't know if he is the right coach. But I'm not going to take away parts that I believe can be important. Because what you learn, we tried to do that with Steve Kerr. Everyone needs a coach. Secretariat needs a jockey, a harness, a bridle. Everyone needs a coach. So that coach becomes very important. Who he is as a coach, now that we will see.
All I meant, and I'm glad you clarified there, is not that you throw it out, meaning he didn't learn anything, meaning that wasn't an important experience for him. I just mean when you look at his overall coaching win-loss record, it is greatly inflated by those 40 games he coached when Steve Kerr was injured.
I'm not going to give him credit for the wins.
Right, that's what I meant.
But the intel and being around great players, being in pressurized situations, LeBron, He has coached players like LeBron.
Right.
Why? Because he was there with in Golden
Curry.
State.
Yep.
So that experience becomes critical.
When you talk about Luke Walton and the minutes, is there a correlation, and I don't know this, but is there a correlation between the minutes he plays and the pace with which they're going to play? We talked about how slow Cleveland played last year, but
That's a great question, Jenna. Maybe
that affects it?
All minutes are not created equal. It is a great question and a great point. It's easier for LeBron to lead the league in minutes if his team is playing at a snail's pace, as it has in the last few years, or at least not a fast pace. It's much more difficult if you're running up and down the court.
It is much more difficult that way. And as Nick said, that was a tremendous question. What if LeBron, as we talked about before, if they play Kuzman at the five and LeBron at the four? So if he plays those extended minutes and he's playing against bigger people, that could take more of a wear and tear, just like up and down the court. So all the minutes aren't the same, and we need to watch how, for which the style they're going to play and what position does LeBron play on the court.
One last note. The Lakers last year won 35 games. 54 times they had fourth quarter leads. They lost more games that they led in the fourth quarter last year than any team in the league except for Dallas. They now have the best closer in basketball. That and that alone is going to jump their win total at least 10 because they won't be giving away games late the way they did last year.
All right, let's take a break. Get back to some football on the other side. Coming up, hey, why are John Elway and the Broncos fighting for their lives? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, I'm expanding my vocabulary. I am yoked to have three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth join the show.
What about stoked to have three-time Super Bowl champion?
Yoked means really strong.
Yeah.
I am now decreasing my vocabulary. I'm walking that one back.
Sometimes you have dresses on that you're like, wow, man, I look so muscular. It's she's yoked. That's the way he is. He's yoked.
Awesome.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Hey, you want to talk about some football?
Sure.
Let's talk about that.
Nick, how does it feel to be sitting between two yoked athletes?
Yes.
It's good to have a second yoked athlete out here other than Jenna, so I'm glad to have Sting.
Take that one, Sting.
Wow. You thought you were going to hit me? Oh, Perry, yeah, right back at you.
Sting, one of your former teams, the Broncos, taking on the Cardinals on Thursday Night Football here on Fox. Broncos have lost four straight. Not great. Free agent acquisition, Case Keenum, tied for the lead in picks. That's also not great. Now they go on the road where head coach Vance Joseph is 1-9 in his short tenure. That's the not greatest. Safe to say it is desperate times at Mile High. Here's John Elway with more.
The bottom line that it starts with me, and then, you know, it goes on down that, you know, everybody's got their responsibility. And so, you know, I don't think it's never in football. It's never one player. It's never one situation. But as a whole, that's why it's hard to win. Well, obviously, it's, you know, it's very difficult to stay positive, and you really have to make an effort to stay positive with it, continue to try to work at it, because that's the only way we're going to get out of this. And so hopefully we can continue to do that this week and with a short week get turned around and take a mentality into that Thursday night game that we're fighting for our lives.
See, it sounds like he's saying the right words, but what's gone on with the Broncos this year?
Oh, yeah, John could say all the right stuff now. I mean, John's been doing this a long time. John was a prodigy as an athlete, as a kid, drafted Major League Baseball. I mean, he's one of the greatest athletes that we had ever seen, let alone play the quarterback position. His resume was going to be one of the all-time losers. But then they got Terrell Davis, got a defense, got an influx of talent, and he turned that around by finishing his career winning two Super Bowls. And when he took over to be the general manager in Denver, John's biggest problem was he was very successful early because they had a situation in Indianapolis with Peyton Manning. They were getting rid of Peyton, and Peyton happened to land in Denver. There's a lot of places Peyton could have gone. People give John Elway some of the credit because he landed him. There was a lot of teams that wanted him. It was not easy. They landed him, and he ended up winning. So John got credit for that. And I can understand that because people will give you credit. You start to develop a reputation. I work with a lot of wide receivers, college football coaches, NFL general managers, coaches. They call me all the time. Chris, who are you working with? Who's the guys you're working with? Because I had success early. I had Larry Fitzgerald when he was 14. I told the people at Ohio State, the people at Pitt, he's the best wide receiver in the country. So people started to trust me. Like, oh, so I started to develop a reputation. Then later on, Randy Moss and Amari Cooper and other guys. Man, here of late, I've missed on a couple guys. So has John. So now when people start to call you, they're like, man, if Chris can't be an expert with wide receivers, what can he be an expert at? So Then people begin to question how much you know football-wise. Now, they have the Super Bowl champions, the championships, to be able to support him. He has the organizational support. But John Elway has just not gotten the quarterback position right. He has thrown money, draft picks, free agent. He's done everything to try to do it, and he hadn't been able to do it right. So Denver is in this position. Why? Because of their quarterback and other things. But with John Elway, it's always going to be based on what did John do at quarterback. And at Denver, they just have not answered the question here of late, Stink.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the quarterback position, he did get Peyton Manning signed. So he was one for one there. He got rid of Tim Tebow, and he got Peyton Manning.
Yes.
So maybe that's two for two. But then he swung and missed on Paxton Lynch. And, you know, you look at Case Keenum and what's going on with Case Keenum. I think one of the issues that Denver has, and this has been an issue now for several years, and Peyton Manning will make up for some mistakes, right, because he is that good. It's Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. He'll make up for a multitude of mistakes. So one of the issues is that you have an incredibly talented receiver core that you pay a lot of money to with DT. With Emmanuel Sanders, you got Cortland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton can play. I mean, they've got a great core. And so you want to get all those guys on a football field at the same time because they're dynamic, right? The issue is that when you come out in three wides and you spend that kind of time and investment on the outside and you don't take care of the inside out, like you get spread. Your left tackle has more tackles in the last 3 weeks than Von Miller. He has tackled more dudes playing left tackle.
Now, he's not supposed to play.
No, no, no. You're not supposed to be tackling dudes.
You're talking about holding penalties, interceptions.
You're talking about tackles on turnovers?
No. Okay. I'm talking about tackling defensive linemen. He's got more tackles than Von Miller. That's an issue. And when you start playing the three wides and you start getting guys outside the numbers, you start getting guys outside the, you know, the outside starts to, you become thin inside.
Are you playing football a lot like Seattle, but you don't have Russell Wilson?
Right. Yes, you don't have Russell Wilson to make up for those mistakes. And then when I think ultimately what happens to a quarterback, and it's funny because I was talking to Kyle Shanahan about this, about foot speed and about timing of routes. You know this. When you drop back in a five-step drop, that route times up with the drop. And when you start speeding up your feet because you know you're not going to be protected because you're going to get pressure inside, you're going to get somebody in your lap, you're going to get a left tackle who's going to be compromised, now all of a sudden you start speeding up your feet and your routes don't time up with the quarterback's footwork.
The quarterback's ready to throw before I'm ready to come out of my break.
Right, exactly. And so one thing we've seen with Case Keenum is wildly inaccurate throws. He misses a throw on Monday night, and you saw it against a cover two, misses a throw to DT. Ooh. I mean, it's
up the rail.
Right.
Don't end the game.
Right, and it's going to end the game, and it's a throw that average quarterback should make. Any average quarterback should make that throw. And he threw it over his head by about 3 yards. I mean, those are the things that have happened to Denver. And Case certainly hasn't played like he played last year.
So how can it be that a guy who I understand John Elway is more than just a quarterback, but a guy who obviously is in the Hall of Fame because of how well he played that position has been so bad at evaluating that position?
But, because I have an answer to that because people ask me this all the time. I think for Chris or for me or for John, it's probably easier to evaluate guys on the other side of the ball because that's what you watch your whole career. You're watching cornerbacks. You're watching how they play, the leverage they use, how they turn their hips. Can they run? Do they come out of breaks? Can you set them up? I'm watching defensive linemen. How does a guy counter move? What's a guy's go-to move? How does he line up? So you watch so much of that that I think you're better at evaluating that side of the ball than you are your side of the ball.
But, okay, just to push back a little bit, with that said, I watch you on the broadcasts, and you teach me something about offensive line play every single time I watch you call a game. I do this show with Chris. I learn about running routes and about releases and every time we talk about it. And when I go ahead.
Seinfeld trivia.
Exactly. Jenna Wolf and her Seinfeld trivia.
Yes.
Like what you were an expert in. Exactly right. And so when I look at John Elway, you're right. moving on from Tim Tebow after he had won a playoff game
right.
and seemed to be touched by God almost literally as far as the run they went on, that was a hard decision. Getting Peyton Manning, listen, the Texans could have gotten him. And the Texans said, nah, we don't want him. So I give John Elway credit for pulling the trigger there because he wasn't a sure thing coming off a neck surgery.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But he also not only spent a premium pick on Brock Osweiler, after having Brock in the building, right. said, I want to give you $65 million. It was only the Texans once again helped him out by saying, no, we want to give you more. After scouting Paxton Lynch said, I want to trade up to be able to take you in the first round. He's now, I think, out of football.
Yeah.
Like, so how do we make sense of that? That's the part that I think, I mean, I know they have offensive line issues.
Right.
You know this team way better than I do.
I will tell you just from an organizational, philosophical approach, not that they've told me this, but just being there every day and doing a radio show, the last year in the draft, the last couple of years, and I think this goes back to them getting beat down by Seattle in a Super Bowl, that Seattle beat them in the Super Bowl and beat them badly. And the whole thing was they're so much more as a football team athletic than we are. And I think they went as an organization on this run of drafting athletes, right? Mm-hmm. Football is not hard for football players. It's not. It's exceptionally hard for athletes, okay? There's a different deal there. You have got to draft football players. And they went on a 2-3 year run where they were trying to draft athletes and make them football players. That doesn't work. You have to be a football player. And I'm telling you, they had a 3-year run. Right now, one of their issues, they don't have depth because of past draft classes.
Right.
They drafted a kid that really never played corner who was an unbelievable athlete to play corner for them. They had to cut him this year. They drafted him in the third round last year. Like, those are wasted picks. They brought him back to practice squad, but those are wasted picks. And when you pick that way, you're in trouble. They've completely changed the philosophical approach to the draft. And this year, they got a bunch of football players. And those guys are playing good football for them right now. But they just lack depth as an organization.
So I never made it in the NFL.
That's right.
Coming up, Eagles. They drafted an athlete. Got that. Mm-hmm. Have the Eagles finally gotten over their Super Bowl hangover? Stick around, Stink. We want to hear what you have to say about that next on First Things First. Thursday Night Football returns as Von Miller and the Broncos battle Josh Rosen and the Cardinals. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video. Stink back with us. Time for stories to start your morning. Night 2 of the NBA season. Pelicans, Rockets. Anthony Davis was the story in this one. Dominated Houston. 32 points, 16 boards, 8 assists in a 131-112 win. Nick, were you more impressed with the brow or concerned with how the Rockets played last night?
Listen, 32-16, 8-3-3. That's the line from Anthony Davis. That is as good of a line as we're going to see all opening week. But the Rockets allowing 131, which I don't believe they allowed in the regular season all of last year. They came out like a team that was playing their last preseason game, not their home opener after one of their best seasons in franchise history. They weren't ready to play last night. That's disappointing.
Yeah, not surprised by Anthony Davis's line, but the Houston's lack of energy for the open the season compared to the way they opened the season last year with the win over Golden State. Totally different team took the court last night.
But they had Melo.
Let's not blame Melo.
Yeah,
for
that's
last
the 130
night.
Points. Melo.
Let's blame Melo. Why not? Yeah. Why
off
not?
The bench. What do you have, 6?
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard made his Raptors debut last night. He had 24 points, 12 rebounds, and a win over Cleveland. CeCe, how impressed were you with what you saw from Kawhi last night?
Oh, I like Kawhi because we got into all this stuff about Kawhi. We forgot how good of a basketball player he is. The reason why he's one of the top 5. There's a reason why he's awesome both on the offensive end and defensive end. Yes. I believe Toronto is a better team than they were last year.
And they won 59 games last year. Yesterday, we talked about Sixers-Celtics. Is that an Eastern Conference Finals preview? Let's not forget about a team that the only reason they haven't been to a couple finals the last few years is because they could never beat LeBron. LeBron's gone now. If Nick Nurse can coach, if he can do the job Dwayne Casey did, this is a very dangerous team. Kawhi looked fully healthy last night.
All right. Nice to see him back playing again. Big news for U.S. soccer. The women's national team beat Canada 2-0 last night to win the 2018 CONCACAF Championship. Pretty good sign as they prepare for the 2019 World Cup in where, CeCe?
The World Cup?
Yeah, it's Paris. In Paris. Just letting you read along. Nick, how great does the team
look? CC didn't know it was in Paris. Okay. I'm like, who are they talking about? Paris Jackson?
How good did this team look as they get ready now for 2019?
Well, listen, in this CONCACAF tournament, not only do they go 5-0-0, they outscored opponents 26-0. So a 2-0 win over Canada was their least dominant performance of the tournament.
Jenna, I know something about the women's soccer. What I don't know is about the sorry men's team. The women have been dominant for years. My daughter was a college soccer player. Yes, they dominated this tournament.
Shout out to Alex Morgan. I mean, the U.S. swept all the awards. Alex Morgan won the Golden Boot. Julie Ertz won the Golden Ball. And they even won the Fair Play Award for least yellow cards and red cards. Just a totally dominant performance from the favorites for the Women's World Cup.
Off the top of your head.
Yeah, the men's stink.
Moving on to Khalil Mack. He has absolutely dominated the league this season. His Bears will be challenged this weekend, though, as they face the New England Patriots. However, one comparison to an all-time great was a bridge too far for Bill Belichick.
Bill, you've seen a lot of good pass rushers in your career, starting with Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White. Does Mack sort of rank up there with one of the better ones you've seen?
Oh, I mean, we're talking about Lawrence Taylor now. Yeah, I'm not putting anybody in Lawrence Taylor's class. So you put everybody down below that. That's with a lot of respect to a lot of good players now, but we're talking about Lawrence Taylor.
So Lawrence Taylor saw this and simply responded what he said. Exactly. That was the most fired up I think I've ever seen Bill Belichick, and I barely heard what he said. Stink, what do you make of what Bill Belichick had to say about Khalil and LT?
I played against
Lawrence. You got some. You got a taste. Yeah,
I did.
He gave you a taste.
He gave me a little taste. I used to call him Mr. Taylor. He's frightening. Not only, listen, man, that dude was the most he was like, you know all these Marvel comic movies that they put out all the time, right? Like that, he was a Marvel comic character before. Like, he was not even real. Like, his on the field, he wasn't even real.
Just that stronger, dude. Faster.
When we started the meeting, I played three straight years again. We beat him 5 out of 6 times too. Buddy Ryan, we started the offensive game plan, said, I've never ever said this before in my history of coaching. We're getting ready to double this guy every single play. Even when we run away from him, we're going to double team him. There will not be a play that he will play against us where we will not double team Lawrence Taylor. Now, the quarterback's playing now. Right. They couldn't play with LT because LT, not only was he great, but he put some fear in you by his conversation and what he told you he was going to do to you.
Oh, dude, he was unreal. We got to the point when I was in Washington where we would not run away from Lawrence Taylor. Every play we ran at him.
Why?
Because if you ran away from him, he'd tackle you. We had a play where we broke one out on a counter away from him, and we ran it probably about, I don't know, 45, 50 yards. Gerald Riggs down the sideline. Lawrence Taylor caught him, strip fumble, recovered the fumble. Giants ball the other way, we lose it. In the very end of the game. We got to the point where you can't run away from him. He'll make every play in the backfield. So we just ran at him, and we thought the whole principle of it was we're going to run at him, we're going to put helmets on him as much as possible, and hope to God it slows him down in pass rush occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, so not only size, speed, he had a variety of different moves that he went to. And people used to say this a number of years ago when J.J. Watt, when he was in his prime. Oh, man, he's Reggie White. No, he's not Reggie White. I played against LT a bunch, and Reggie White was my teammate. So it's nice a lot of times we try to correlate. Oh, yeah, Khalil Mack, he's played phenomenal, but he is not Lawrence Taylor.
What's the difference in how intimidating he was compared to some of the guys today? Because you talk about LT, and all I hear, he was so intimidating.
You're not allowed to be as intimidating today.
Absolutely.
Because the quarterbacks today know, no matter what trash you're talking, the entire football
you
industrial
can only
complex
inflict so much pain on
them. Right, it's set up to protect the quarterback. There were no, I don't want to say there were no rules, but, I mean, Lawrence Taylor was able to do almost anything he wanted once he got to the quarterback. Like,
And so, he took over the title as fiercest rusher from Deacon Jones. Deacon Jones, he's the one that made the head slap illegal. He said, man, what do you do to him? Man, oh, I slap a guy on his left or right ear. Does it work? He said, well, it stuns him for a second.
Yeah.
They made that illegal. Right. And then Lawrence Taylor took over as the most feared rusher. Intimidation was such a part of the game in the 70s and 80s that's been eliminated. But let's not forget the power and the speed. When you saw him play at the University of North Carolina, it was like they shot him out of a cannon. Like, he knew the offense what the snap count was. So, man, his get-off on the ball was phenomenal. There's not players like him you can compare
I'll tell you what. I'll break the huddle against LT. And you had counter called. And you walk up the line of scrimmage, and you just be peeking out the side of your eyes, and he'd be down there at the end. You knew you had to pull and trap him, right? And I'd be like, I get in my stance. You know, the thing about fear, because I was scared to death, but you know, it didn't stop me from putting one foot in front of the other, right? That's the difference about going out and playing. But I'd be in my stance going, oh God, this is gonna hurt me a lot more than it's gonna hurt him. Like, he was gonna feel no pain. And you just run down and bam, you know, it'd be a huge collision. And your neck would be like, and he'd be just like, hey, good hit, youngster.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Coached by Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Head coach Bill Parcells. So you're talking about, remember I tell you, 99% of the players need a system? He didn't need a system, but he had the perfect system, that 34. He could rush off on that left tackle, man.
He's in the 1% that doesn't need a system, but he also happened to be in the perfect
system for him.
Which is why, I know you're not into this, but if we were to remove, like, positional value and someone were to say, who's the greatest football player ever? If someone says Lawrence Taylor, you can't dismiss it.
No.
Like, he is absolutely in the discussion for not the greatest pass rusher ever, the greatest football player ever.
He changed offensive football and made you put your best offensive lineman at left tackle.
Yeah.
Because they start putting their best rush guy at the right defense.
Everyone thinks the book and movie, The Blind Side, is about Michael Orr. It's actually about Lawrence Taylor. Everyone, if you only saw the movie with Sandra Bullock and her Academy Award, I get it. Read the book. Because the book is actually about Lawrence Taylor, with Michael Orr being the contemporary left tackle.
Oh, I thought it was about a white family adopting a poor black kid.
Oh, it was really about Lawrence Taylor.
No,
that's a good way to win an Academy Award, though.
Man.
On a related note, the new space movie is about Neil Armstrong, in case anyone's wondering.
Jenna Wolf, yesterday, halfway through it, says to Dusty.
More people are watching the show. You're not trying to make them go away.
Okay, sorry.
Well, now you left out the only part.
She said Neil? Is it Neil Armstrong?
I just didn't
That's
know.
A true story.
Moving on to the defending Super Bowl champs, but I love you, Dusty. They broke a two-game losing streak by trouncing the Giants on Thursday Night Football. This week, they will face a Carolina Panther team in what could be a playoff preview. Cam Newton trying to get his team back on track after losing to Washington last week. Carson Wentz trying to keep his team on track after their win last week.
We're hungry. You know, that's a locker room of hungry guys. And so when guys make mistakes, they're not happy about it. You know, they're not guys that hang their heads. We're guys that are looking forward to improve off of that mistake and learn from it. So I think really all the coaches, and then the leaders on this team did a great job last week on a short week of just reminding everybody who we are and just playing fast, playing our football. Yeah, I mean, anytime you can play a game like that against an NFC East opponent like that on the road, you know, on Thursday Night Football, of that, you know, it gives you confidence. You know, every time we go out there and we put up a performance like that, you know, we're just one step closer to being who we are and knowing who we are. And so, yeah, it definitely gives us confidence going forward.
All right, Stink, the Giants weren't exactly the fiercest, toughest opponent, but the Eagles did beat them. How close are they now when you look at this Philadelphia team to resembling the team we saw march through and win last year?
Well, I think they're growing closer to that. Still some defensive struggles that they have had. You know, Saquon Barkley ran through them, caught the ball underneath, made big plays in the passing game. But I think offensively, the thing to me that is setting them apart, or will set them apart, is Carson Wentz coming off the knee injury and him continuing to develop, him continuing to get confidence. Anytime you come off an injury like that, it takes you a bunch of games. It takes you 5, 6, 7 games to all of a sudden be like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about my knee in practice. I didn't even think about the recovery. I didn't even think about that in the game. And so it gets you to the point where you start to develop more and more and more confidence. And when you do that, you're going to play faster and faster. And so I think that's offensively where they are. When they get that rhythm back with their quarterback, they start running the ball a little bit more because they do have a tendency to get away from it. I think then we'll see this team continue to progress and get to back to kind of their Super Bowl form.
Yeah, I think there was a trap that they had to fall into because, for one, whoever they were going to be this year, regardless of how well they played, they couldn't be the team from last year. because the quarterback wasn't there. And Stink, you know this. When we start a season over now in the NFL, more so even than when we play, you got 30, 35% new faces.
Yeah.
So you're saying, okay, you know, I want this team to play like last year's team with 30 to 40% new personnel, including the most important one, the quarterback. Like, it's not a goal that's obtainable. So, like, we shouldn't be talking about Carson Palmer. I mean, Carson Wentz. What I like here in the press conference, he skipped over that. He said, we got back to the identity for which we know. That's playing fast, because there are certain traits or characteristics that teams want to be able to play to. And I think that's what's more important right. to Philadelphia, being a physical football team, offense and defense up front, not giving up big plays on the back end. These are the type of characteristics, mixing the run with the pass, moving the quarterback out of the pocket. These are the characteristics to playing good football, not to last year's Super Bowl. So for me, we got to stop, and they got to stop trying to get back to something that's not obtainable, because we don't have the same guys. So now I'd be asking these guys to play like the guys that I had last year.
Agreed, except for this point. They do have the same offensive line. They have the same defensive line with some additions.
No, they don't.
What do you mean?
Jason Peters. He's starting. Right?
But he was there for the bulk of their run last year.
No. Let's go to the last two games of the regular season, the two games in the playoffs, sure. and the Super Bowl. That's a five game. That's the team that won the Super Bowl. Would you guys agree? It's not the team that started in September.
Agreed.
It was that team that took the field in late December, questionable. That's why you had huge question marks about them. So you can't. That offensive line's not the same. The defensive line's not the same.
So the point that I think you might actually agree with the point I'm trying to make, which is the way they were in position to have home field was the strength of their offensive line, defensive line, and quarterback play. Now those three units, like what we saw against the Giants was how the Eagles were in the position they were in pre-Carson Wentz injury. Against the Giants, they allow one sack after the offensive line not playing well. Against the Giants, their D-line looks ferocious. And I think most importantly, against the Giants, Carson Wentz was better on third down, completed more passes, and had more yards passing on third down against the Giants than he had in the three previous games combined. That, to me, was what their special sauce was last year, prior to the underdogs, prior to the injuries. Like, we got to see how they're going to be in the playoffs once the playoffs start. But to get back there and to potentially have another home game in Philadelphia, it's offensive line, defensive line, yeah, and quarterback.
But there's no team. Maybe there's no team that's preparing, saying, I want to do what I did last year. All right? So we as commentators, I'm not going to commentate because I know no team is doing that.
You know what's interesting? Doing a couple of Rams games, they didn't really play at all in the preseason, their offense. And everybody's like, oh, how's this going to affect them? Well, they brought back a 10 of 11 starters. So they had continuity from last year. Like, the Philadelphia Eagles started the season without their quarterback. He wasn't full go in practice. So you've got an extension in the first 3 weeks of really you're playing preseason games.
Yes.
As you're trying to get your – but you're in the regular season. So there was going to be a learning curve for them. But I'm with you. When they get the offensive line, defensive line, that they're built from the inside out.
It's not – to me, it's not about how did we win last year. It's about what is the strength of our team. Like, let's say last year never happened. We would look at the Eagles and say the strength of their team should be their right. big people and their quarterback. That's the point I'm
making. And that's what they should be talking about. And that's what we should be talking about, because what happened last year, it does not help Carson Wentz. It does not help Jason Peters. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they weren't there. They were just like me, not there.
We actually were there.
Stick around. Be here when we come back. Coming up, can the Cowboys keep their momentum going against Washington? That's next on First Things First. Coming up Saturday, number 6, Michigan takes on in-state rival number 24, Michigan State. Then Pac-12 contenders collide as Colorado takes on 15th-ranked Washington. It all kicks off Saturday, 11:30 Eastern on Fox.
Coach Izzo, give me a call, man, if you need me to come to Michigan State to give them a little pep talk, bro.
Coach Harbaugh, give me a call if you need me to get the Wolverines ready. Got to stay with one loss till they take on those Buckeyes late in the year.
Lupe, give me a call. We'll chat.
Lupe? Oh, Coach Harbaugh, or Coach Izzo's wife.
Coach Izzo's wife.
Yeah, there you go. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you for me. Back here with Mark Schlereth, we are going viral. Jon Gruden is just 6 games into his 10-year, $100 million contract. But with the Raiders off to a 1-5 start, Oakland fans are already wondering when the head coach will get axed. Launching this is GrudenGoneYet.com website that tracks if he has been fired. So how much time is left on his contract? How much money he has made since you visited the site? How much money he has made in total? And how much money is he still owed? For all of those answers, you can go ahead and check.
Quit pocket watching, people. You can criticize Gruden all you want. I do it quite a bit. But leave his money alone. That money ain't your money. So it's Mark Davis.
No, criticize him. Don't listen to Nick Wright. If they give someone a 10-year, $100 million contract, criticize him. Because right now, it looks like one of the worst deals in sports. You remember when they had the heist, when Jerry Jones and them heisted the Vikings over the Herschel Walker thing? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, this one's worse. This one's bad.
Gruden, give me a call. We'll talk.
Okay. you guys were having people call.
Yeah.
I felt like I was out of it.
Stink will go out to Oakland, give a... Well, Jenna, you look so confused.
It says Gruden has made 517 since you've arrived.
It's a screenshot of the website. They mean you've been on the website.
No,
As soon as you get there, how much he's made.
He just made $5. It just keeps going.
That's tough to swallow. Yeah. I got to get one of those. Back to America's team for Nick. Although a few more losses, and they may have to put that title on hold. It's not necessarily America's team when you just keep losing. Cowboys are coming off a win over Jacksonville. They got Washington this weekend. Dallas has an opportunity to share the division lead if they can pull out a win. Ezekiel Elliott talked to reporters yesterday, highlighting the importance of a little momentum here.
I think it was a game we needed. I said it before, if we don't build on that, then everything we did last weekend, really. You know what I mean? It means nothing.
All right. What do the Cowboys need to do this? I mean, they've gone, win-loss. They can't seem to get two in a row. But what would they have to do now to get some momentum?
I think they've developed a formula, and that formula is we're going to run the ball 35 times. We're going to keep it out of our quarterback's hands. We're going to open up the play-action aspect of our game, make some easy throws. I mean, if we're going to throw it 25 times, we're going to make 11, 12 legitimate completions off the play action for Dak Prescott that are going to be easy one-route reads, and we're going to dominate the line of scrimmage. And I mean, that's the formula right now, not only with Zeke, but also with Dak Prescott designed runs. I think he ran it 11 times, probably 6 or 7 of them were designed runs where he pulled it and kept it. So that, to me, is the formula that they created. That's how they're going to have to win because they lack talent on the edge. They lack talent at the receiver position. So that opens up those guys to get one-on-ones on a consistent basis. I think that's the formula, and that's what they have to adhere to.
We talk about the Cowboys in a different way because of the uniforms they wear, because of who their owner is, and because their quarterback had a great rookie year. We got to talk about the Cowboys the way last year we were talking about the Jaguars. How are they going to win? Heavy dose of Leonard Fournette. Zeke's better than Leonard Fournette, and a great defense. This defense isn't as good as last year's Jags defense.
If they actually were the Jags, we wouldn't be talking about them.
Agreed. Yeah. Right? No, but my point is that's the style of football they have to play.
Right. Absolutely.
They've got some of the best stories in the league this year on the Cowboys' defense. Leighton Vander Esch, I thought that was a reach in the first round. I thought they should have taken Calvin Ridley. I thought they should have gone wide receiver. They decided to add because they know Sean Lee's going to miss time. Sean Lee's missing time. Leighton Vander Esch has played well as a rookie. Jalen Smith, a guy who, yesterday, when we were talking about Nicky Bosa, pardon me, sitting out the rest of the year, I couldn't stop but think about Jalen Smith because Jalen Smith was a draft profile similar to Nick Bosa before he got hurt, fell to the second round. Cowboys took a chance on him. Now he looks like that player. DeMarcus Lawrence is earning that franchise tag at $19 million. And Zeke is the best pure runner of the football once again in the NFL. Any plays they get from their quarterback vertically are a bonus right now. You can't bake that into any of the math we're doing about how they're going to beat Washington this weekend.
Why is it so hard for America to wrap their head around the fact that Dallas could be a defensive team with a little offense sprinkled in?
Oh, it's not sexy. Oh, it's so much easier to talk about. Dak and Zeke and, and Dez and Witten and, the Dak of 216, he's not there. Now, we know physically Witten and Dez are not there. Ezekiel Elliott is a special, special football player, and they spent so much money on the offensive line. It's not just because it's the Dallas Cowboys. That's just the way the optics on the NFL are. People know more about the offensive players, and they like talking about the offensive players. We're scoring more points, so we should be talking about the offensive players. But what's your formula to winning? Regardless of, man, what is sexy to talk about, man, like, we got some real family business we need to talk about. Like, listen, every family's got a budget. You got to live within that budget, and that's what Dallas should. Their budget's 25 passes. Right. If they go over that, I mean, I started the segment earlier saying, oh, they should spread it out, New England. Let's go five wide. Let's go empty. You're going to throw the ball 50 times, only run it 10 times. We have seen New England just devastate people. After the previous week, they ran the ball 40 times.
Right.
Dallas does not have that. We can't expect them. We can't expect that type of creativity. But they're going to have to add on to the 8 runs that Dak had last week that looked like more called design runs. Because as a quarterback, he does not have the physical body that you're going to be able to say, hey, my guy, like they did with Cam Newton at Auburn. They don't even do that with Cam Newton in Carolina. But what they did in Auburn said, my guy is bigger, stronger, faster and more physical than you. You can't play that way. So for me is, what new creative things do they come up off those design runs to try to come up with some type of big play?
I think it's interesting because offensive football, we're living fantasy football. Like the league continues to change the rules to make it, you know, that fantasy football is so popular. Say, hey, you might as well, you're playing it, watch it.
Yes.
Here's fantasy football for you guys. So this is what we're doing. The Dallas Cowboys can't get duped into believing they can be that. You understand what you are. Understand who you are. And I think, interestingly,
wasn't that one of the things that made you a great player?
Absolutely. And I played on teams like the teams that I played on, we are what we are. We're going to do what we're going to do. I don't care if you know we're running 18 handoff or 19 handoff. I don't care if you think we're running 19 toss or 18 toss or we're running force or, you know, I don't care. The bottom line is, I'm better than you and I'm going to out-execute you. Because I run 6 plays, and I run them exceptionally well. Now, I'll put some window dressing on those damn things, but this is the 6 plays we run, and we're going to out. That's what Dallas has to do. Here's what we are, and we can out-execute you. There's very few New England Patriots out there in the National Football League that basically take your weakness and say, that's all we're going to do is attack it. Everybody says they do it, and everybody will build a play in. But everybody, for the most part, is going to do what they do.
They fall back to what is easy for them. That's what makes the Patriots special. The Patriots, it's not about what's easy for us. It's about what's hard for you. Whatever's hard for you, that's what we're going to do.
Right.
But there's a reason the Patriots are in a different class as far as success than every other team in the league over the last 2 decades. Most other teams have to almost do the opposite. What are we good at? You just said you guys had 6 plays that you guys were awesome at.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just make sure we run those 6 plays to perfection. For the Dallas Cowboys, what are we good at offensively? Everything involving 21, and not a whole hell of a lot involving 4. Let's make sure
4, because 4 can fake it. Give it to 21 or
yes,
keep
that's
it.
Yes, that's the true personality.
He could do that. He could do that.
Sure.
And
because
that
also
well.
The influence of 21.
Right. And the influence of 21 holds the underneath coverage so nobody can get depth.
Yep.
And it opens
that
up that. It opens up those 12-yard, you know, 12-yard drag routes, 12-yard in-cutting routes. It opens those things. Those are wide open. And you and I could complete those throws. You could complete those throws. So that's what they're going to have to hang their hat on and say, this is who we are. And we're okay with that. Because you're going to possess the ball. You're going to keep your defense fresh. And let me tell you, that defense will fly around and hit people. And as long as they don't have to play 75 plays, they're going to be in every game.
All right, Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's always
much
a pleasure.
Much appreciated. Coming
good
up, can Kirk Cousins lead the Vikings to the top of the NFC North? That's next on
Don't be back over at my office wrecking shop and everything. Put some clothes on over there, too. We're not allowed
to sink walking around wearing tank tops in the office.
Chef comes into
my
the room
clothes again.
Yes.
Coming up a little later in the show, Steelers running back James Conner joins us live in studio in about 20 minutes right here on First Things First. Got a lot of questions
I think
for
he's
James
a little early.
Conner.
I think we might see him in like 10. Make sure people are watching. I cannot wait to talk to James Conner. Pitt, great. One of the best running backs in football the last few weeks. Excited to talk to him.
Great story. Excited to hear him. All right, game 5 of the NLCS last night. Clayton Kershaw had a dominant performance, striking out 9, allowing 1 run in 7 innings. Yasiel Puig pinch hitting in the 6th to give the Dodgers a 3-1 lead. They would go on to win 5-2. They now lead the series 3-2 as it heads back to Milwaukee for game 6 tomorrow night on FS1.
Puig acting like it's a walk-off.
Was he yelling at the coach or what was he yelling?
He was so excited because they tied the game in the 5th. They then in the 6th, they've got a man on 1st and 2nd. His hit gives them the lead. Now, the guy on 1st ended up getting caught in a rundown, Max Muncy, but Puig didn't care. He was stoked. Kershaw actually goes to the plate in the next inning, draws a walk, scores an insurance run. Kershaw now has 8 postseason starts. 8. 1 run or less, 3 hits or less. No one else in baseball history has more than 5 such starts. So for a guy is a few bad postseason performances, when he hasn't had those blow-up innings.
Well, we saw one in the first game.
Right, but we've also seen 2 spectacular
gems.
Performances.
Yes.
Yeah. Kershaw, the best pitcher of his generation, maybe the best pitcher of any generation, another great performance last night.
That's how you win 3 Cy Youngs.
And Puig, man, I'm so excited for
him. We're going to get to LeBron
That's
in a minute,
guy.
But first, Blake Griffin goes up. Watch him, where he is. I think we saw this in the preseason, up for the dunk, and Jared Allen.
We're trying to dunk
so
on Jared Allen, Blake. That fro says no fly zone.
That's
Come
amazing.
Get some.
Almost the same play again. Blake gets away with a little hook right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Normally, Blake would have punched this one on him.
Shout out to Andre Drummond. Starts the season the way he had so many nights last night.
That's part of that Kardashian curse. Hadn't been able to leap since the Kardashian interview.
Undrafted rookie Alonzo Trier showing off his explosiveness in his NBA debut.
See, this is a player you said you were excited to watch when you go to all these Knicks games this year with your connection and all. Alonzo Trier, a guy we watched a bit in college.
Oh, yeah, Arizona.
When we were in L.A.
Yeah, he was on a really talented Arizona team. Yes, I will be in the Garden Saturday. Let's see the Celtics coming to the Garden. We got the Warriors. I got a couple tickets for you and the missus coming to the Warriors.
Boban!
Clippers Nuggets. Boban Marjanovic, 7-3, but really 8-3.
Pizza box, Jenna.
Pizza box.
You couldn't slide a pizza box under his foot when he was dunking.
Nah.
He was on the ground.
He's on his tiptoes, man.
Tissue paper.
Look at that.
Later in the game, they had to stop the game because he bent the rim with one of his dunks. Everyone right now, when you get a chance, Google Boban Anthony Davis. Because Anthony Davis is 7 feet tall and Boban towers over him.
Yeah, that's not the first thing he's ever broken.
Finally, bottom 9. Astros down 2 out against the Dodgers. Bases loaded. Andrew Benintendi diving to make the game-ending catch, robbing Alex Bregman of a potential walk-off. Sox take the 3-1 series lead.
Man, he got a great jump on this. Man, took a tremendous chance. If this gets past him, oh, man, we got problems.
If it gets past him, game over, Astros win. The single biggest play of the postseason so far, that catch. He takes a chance with the dive, bases loaded. You know guys are going to crack the bat because it's 2 outs. They're down 2 runs. Astros, some bad luck in this game. The Altuve play on the home run, Benintendi robbing him there.
All right, time for drawing a blank.
What's up, Jenna?
Nothing. The Vikings have won their last 2 games to move right in the middle of a jam-packed NFC North, with Minnesota safety Harrison Smith giving the credit to Kirk Cousins, calling him the real deal. So you see, the best team in the NFC North right now is blank.
I got to go with the Vikings. If you look at Chicago and how they've struggled offensively, last week Khalil Mack gets nicked up a little bit. They don't have an effective pass rush. Man, good football teams do not lose the way the Bears lost last week's game to Miami into their backup. I'm going to go with the Vikings, the momentum they've created, and they've been able to do this without a running game. I believe their running game will come back when they get Dalvin Cook healthy.
The Vikings have the best coach in the division by a decent margin. They also have the best overall team in the division. Like, the Packers have a better quarterback. The Bears might have a better overall defense, but the Vikings are in second place in both those categories in their division. I like the Vikings as the best team in the division. Very well coached, explosive offense, very good defense.
All right, let's move on to tonight's Broncos-Cardinals matchup. Thursday Night Football on Fox. Case Keenum will look to get Denver off their 4-game slide, while Josh Rosen looks to get back on track after losing to the Vikings last week. So, Nick, the X factor in tonight's Thursday Night Football game on Fox will be blank.
A guy that I think is learning a lot from CC's guy, Larry Fitzgerald. That's Christian Kirk. Rookie, high second-round pick. His last 2 games, he's really come onto the scene. 11 catches, .162, and a touchdown his last 2 games. He's turned into Rosen's favorite target, with Larry dealing with a little bit of nagging injuries. Christian Kirk is my X factor.
Von Miller. Like, we saw some real leadership in this week's press conference. What y'all gonna do? Man, we're getting ready to go out there and kick they A. Well, no, write it down. All right, put a mic up here. Like, that's what's getting ready to happen. It starts with me. That's sometimes that's the type of leadership that you need in the NFL locker room. He is going to make Josh Rosen nervous in the pocket tonight. Von Miller takes over this game.
All right, a little basketball now. With the Warriors starting off the season 1-0 and locking up the three-peat, focus has shifted to where Kevin Durant will take his talents next season. When KD was asked, he said, quote, "Don't ask me every time you see me." So, CC, I will ask you instead. Kevin Durant's team next season will be blank.
Now, where am I going Saturday night, Jenna?
Going to the Garden.
The Garden. The Knicks, and that's where basketball. Kevin Durant's going to be. Yep, catch the A train, get off on 34th Street. You want to see Kevin Durant play in the future? That's where you're going to. That's where it's going to be. Scott Perry, the general manager, he gets it done. Basketball is back in New York City, 2019.
Maybe don't ask Kevin Durant, but you might be able to ask his brother in some Instagram comments. Commenting yesterday, fill up the hand with rings before we leave town. Mm-hmm. Where is he going? If he leaves Golden State, he's going to the Garden. He's going to New York. He would have his own team. And if you win a championship in New York, there's no yeah buts about it. Like LeBron winning in Cleveland, there's no yeah buts about it. There's no asterisk. There's no whose team is it. It's because of him. Kevin Durant, I think he is leaving the Warriors after this year. I think it's to go to New York.
All right, moving on. There were 11 games of NBA action last night with Kawhi Leonard making his Raptors debut and the Greek Freak dropping 25, 18, and 8 in the Bucks win. But, CC, I will let you make the decision. The best performance from last night's NBA slate was blank.
The brow, Anthony Davis. I mean, what he did to Houston, I mean, that game was one-sided. Now, we thought that he might be an MVP candidate this year, but if they don't make the playoffs, it's hard to get that type of recognition when you're on a losing team. But Anthony Davis, man, stacks the stat sheet, man. He stuffs it. Man, he's one of the favorite players to watch. He has such skill inside and out. Last night was phenomenal.
That's the best answer. He went 32, 16, 8, 3, and 3. And when we're talking about them making the playoffs, getting a road win in Houston,
yeah,
that's important when we know it's going to come down to a game or two. I want to give someone credit. We don't talk a lot about on the show, though. I'm going to say Kemba Walker. They were down 20 points against Giannis in the Bucks. They came all the way back. Walker had
impressive.
A shot at the rim at the end. It just fell off. He went for 41 last night, the high scoring mark on the NBA thus far this season. So Kemba Walker, 41.7 threes for the Charlotte Hornets. I'm going to give him the star of the night.
All right, all eyes will be on LeBron James as he makes his Lakers debut against the Blazers tonight. But both rosters are stacked with players who can steal the Kings' limelight. So, Nick Wright, the player other than LeBron you're excited to watch in tonight's Lakers-Blazers game is blank.
The guy who might be one of LeBron's teammates a year from now, Damian Lillard. Just be careful about what happens in Portland this year if things don't go well. If they are a team that goes from the 3 seed to all of a sudden out of the playoffs, as at least the Vegas projections have them, and Lillard has that gigantic salary. Mm-hmm. We've seen LeBron play next to a guy with that exact skill set in Kyrie Irving. They won a championship that way. Lillard's underrated because he plays in the Pacific Northwest. I'm excited to watch him tonight.
Yeah, his partner in the backcourt, C.J. McCollum, another guy from Ohio. LeBron's from Ohio. I'm from Ohio. C.J.'s from Ohio. Excited to see him. With what Nick's talking about, as far as Damian Lillard being his partner, he would be the face of that organization for a long time. He's been very, very critical of the stars and stuff moving. These other guys not saying anything. He's got a great podcast, too. Check him out. C.J.
Absolutely. That's our guy.
And he sends
CJ, send us some wine, bro.
Send us some wine.
Yeah, Jenna, drink age.
Yeah, he
Congrats
did.
Congrats to him.
His fiance is a dentist. She's awesome. Ooh. Yeah, her, me, Lupe, we're all hanging out now.
Do your thing, Jenna.
Coming up, Steelers running back James Conner is here. Like, literally, he's literally 3 feet away. There he is right there.
Welcome.
Hey, James. We're going to talk to him. Coming up next.
How you doing,
man? How are you?
I'm doing good.
Congratulations.
Appreciate that, bro. Good to see you.
Back here, first things first. So last week, Steelers running back James Conner rushed for over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. The second week in a row, he reached those marks, and the Steelers won their second game in a row. Coincidence? Regardless, we invited him to the show, and he joins us now. James Conner, thank you so much for being with us.
Man, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Year two has proven to be a very good year for James Conner. Of course, a few other factors have sort of worked themselves out, but you've gotten some good playing time, and it's been a nice start to the season. What do you accredit your early success to this season?
Just knowing what to expect. I had my exit meeting with Coach T.
You know, he just said, you're two guys that we need to make a big
Coach
jump.
Coach T is Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin.
Mike Tomlin, they talk about him being a player's coach, but since he came into the league, his personal effect on guys day to day is pretty dramatic. We don't see it on TV. We see him get criticized a lot. See, I know this.
Yeah, you know.
And he has been father figure, mentor, and everything, right?
Yeah. And he lets you know when you're slacking and whatnot, like every day you need to compete. So, yeah, there's no what to expect. You know, there's an expectation. There's a standard there in Pittsburgh. So this offseason, just got ready and, we're starting to show.
Let's stay with Coach Tomlin for a second, just because you referenced him. His resume as far as level of success, never being below 500, the winning seasons, it ranks up against any active coach aside from Bill Belichick, really, who might be the greatest coach ever. Yet, he also is criticized on shows like this as much as almost any coach in the league. What is it like playing for Mike Tomlin?
That's awesome. Coach T, every day, man, he brings energy, and he expects us to compete. And he's just a great person. I wouldn't want to play for nobody else, and I'm just so thankful he drafted me. I feel like we got a special connection from draft night. You know, just how we were talking on the phone. We talked for a while. It wasn't just
what did he say?
Well, he called, and he was like, man, this is the most excited I've been for a pick in a while. So it was nice for him to hear that. And every day, man, you can talk to him about anything. It's way more than football. He's always asking how people's families are. Good person.
Do you think he sometimes gets unfairly criticized just because, like you and I were talking off camera, there's been a lot of drama within the organization. A lot of that sometimes falls on the head coach.
Yeah.
Do you think that's fair, unfair?
You know, it's life. You know, fair or not fair, you know, you got to deal with it. Life isn't fair. But I think Coach T handles it well. He's my guy.
Okay, being in the NFL is very, very difficult. Learning, transitioning, great career there at Pitt. So you share a lot of the same facilities as the Pittsburgh Steelers. How much more difficult is it given your situation? Because as a backup player, most of us come into this league, we're drafted fairly high. We come in, we're backing someone up. That player might be a star player. The player in your case is Le'Veon Bell. Because the organization decided to franchise him, you were kind of in limbo. Okay, I'm going to play because he's going to be held out. I'm getting a lot of reps, but I don't know if I'm going to be considered to be a starter.
Yeah.
Give me some of the people in the organization that have helped support you mentally in trying to be in that kind of gray area, because that's a tough spot for a young player.
Right. The people in the organization is my teammates. All those guys have my back. And the interviews that they get, they believe in me every day, whether they say it on camera or not. Just going through the locker room, and they're like, bro, you run hard, you're the real deal, stuff like that. So as long as I get the respect from my teammates, that's all I care about, really. But coaching staff, everybody believes in me, and it's next man up always.
And also, you have gotten great support from Le'Veon Bell.
Right.
Like, you and him have a great relationship.
Exactly.
Can you explain to our fans and everything your existing relationship with him? How often do you communicate with him and the role that he's played in your development?
Man, anytime I do something good on the field, Le'Veon, I always come back in the locker room from a text from him, you know, saying good game or that nice move right there. So me and Le'Veon are super cool. He's a great person. And, you know, with him holding out, people get to call him selfish and all that. But not the case at all. You know, it's just business. And that's my guy.
Well, so before the season, you mentioned interviews your teammates gave, and when Le'Veon wasn't there for week one, you heard a lot of the offensive linemen say, man, you guys are going to be impressed by James Conner. We see him. Now, I went on TV the next day. And I said, man, I saw James Conner at Pitt. I understand it's a great story. I also know that last year he had, I think, 150 yards total rushing.
Yeah.
He's not Le'Veon Bell.
Right.
Like, I had no reason to believe you could have this level of production.
Yeah.
And now I see through 6 weeks, three games with 100 yards and two touchdowns. Here's the list if you want to see it, guys who've done that.
Yeah.
That's Chris Johnson, Priest Holmes, Sean Alexander, Emmitt Smith, and your name right there.
Good
so,
list.
Like, this is – it's a great list. So you have proven me a fool.
Yeah.
And so – what did you think realistically you could do given your first opportunity to be a full-time starter?
Realistically, I knew what I was capable of. I know the work that I put in, and it was just being patient. I had 150 yards total, but only had 32 carries. So it's like, you know, the work I put in the offseason and training camp, I was taking advantage of those reps. I've always believed in my talents. A lot of things I can do to get better, and I'm excited to work on those things and get better. But I'm not surprised at all, and it's a testament to the guys up front. You know, Marquise Pouncey, Mon Foster, DeCastro, Al, Gill, all those guys up front, and they're beasts, and they make it easy.
I would imagine there's someone else that makes it easier for you, and that's Ben Roethlisberger. Yes, you have Coach T's backing. But Ben Roethlisberger's come out in the last, you know, week or two and said how happy he is with your performance and how much he relies on you and how much he's looking forward to folding you in whenever Lev gets back into the offense. How important has he been? What is your relationship like with Big Ben?
It's awesome. My locker is right by his, so I can just pick his brain whenever I want. His is in this corner. I'm right here.
Is his bigger than yours?
Yeah, he has two. Yeah. He got two. Sure.
They say it's for mail and shoes and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But really,
he got it all.
Okay.
He got a whole closet.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. Anything I'm unsure about, I can just go right there and ask him. On the field, he's a coach on the field about checkdowns, being in the right spots, being available, blitz pickup. He's right there for anything I need. It's unbelievable to see how he just manages everything. Hall of Famer. It's just awesome to play with him.
Yeah, you have a unique story. It comes with a unique haircut.
Yeah.
Can you kind of give us and the fans kind of some of the reason behind it and some of the meaning of it?
Well, in high school, I had it going all along. It was coming out my helmet. I like the way that looked. I actually trimmed it up a little bit, but I still got a little bit coming out the back. I'm just having fun with it, man.
Okay.
I like the way it looks in the front with the business cut and a little fun in the back.
These last 2 weeks, your season could have gone a different way. Obviously, the first four games of the season, nobody expects the Pittsburgh Steelers to be 1-2-1.
Mm-hmm.
And then you guys got a Falcons team that's scoring on everybody, and then the team leading your division in Cincinnati. You guys defensively, of course you scored points against Atlanta, but defensively, the team played great. And then Cincinnati, man, I watched that whole game. Felt like you guys were in control until you weren't. That last drive against Cincinnati, do you feel that could be a fork in the road moment for your season?
Yeah, for sure. But we got Ben. We got number 7 there. We got playmakers, AB. Minute 18 left. Ben's been in that situation too many times, so it was nothing new to him. And we got playmakers all around. I remember being in the backfield. I heard Ben say, ball's gone. Touchdown. I seen AB's game over, you know what I'm saying? So I knew we had a chance, and I'm just happy we came out on top.
What are some of the things you see from Antonio Brown, either in practice or when you guys are watching film, that even as a high-level pro athlete yourself wow you?
It's the consistency, the work ethic, everything, the details, the food he eats, how he prepares, leaving practice, going home, working out still. It's just, there's no slacking in this game. Every day, it's his full-time job. And there's no days off for him, so it's just like unbelievable consistency.
Every player that makes it into the NFL, there's only 18,000 people ever played NFL in 99 years. But your story is very, very unique. You talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Explain to people, they're one of the marquee franchises in the league. When you travel on the road, man, it's easy, 20, 30,000 Steelers fans. What is it like to be a part of Steelers Nation?
Steeler Nation is real. It's everywhere. We went out to a kids' camp out in Cancun this year, and with Joey Porter was out there. We get off the plane out there, and people in Mexico are coming up to us. It's just, it's real, and unbelievable to play for. I don't take it for granted. Every time I put on the black and gold, it's a special, special thing to be a part of. I'm just so thankful I'm a Steeler.
You know, you play with one of the best running backs we've seen in Lev Bell, but is there someone that you've always modeled your game after that maybe even growing up you've wanted to emulate in some way, your style, your approach to the game, the fierceness, whatever it is? Is there someone that you always kind of keep in the back of your head that you want to play like?
He's actually on that list. I grew up a Cowboys fan. I'm all Steelers now.
Mm-hmm.
But growing up, Emmitt Smith was my guy, War 22, growing up in Little League football. But as I get older, I always like guys, LT, LaDainian Thompson, love Marshawn Lynch, love Todd Gurley's game of play. You know, I like to just, you know,
Saquon's a beast. What do all those guys have in common that you want to sort of craft your game to be like?
I think it's just vision, and vision is the main important thing. And just falling forward, getting extra yards, using blocks the right way, setting them up, it's a craft.
Were you mad they didn't challenge that play? You had a touchdown, man.
Yeah.
You had a touchdown. It's good.
They didn't replay it in Cincy on the board, and I was like, I think I tried to twerk my body to get in there and crossed it, you know, but that's
and
on
stayed
me,
off
though.
The ground.
That's on me, though. If I break that tackle and just walk in, I leave no doubt.
Oh, so sure, like, but also, that ended up being a critical moment because I think one of the reasons they don't challenge is, it's first and goal from the inch line. We're going to get it. You guys end up settling for 3. That was a lot of coaches in that spot don't challenge there because, like, we might lose it. We're probably going to punch it in.
We got more downs to go.
You got more downs, but that was a big moment in the game, and you scored. They just missed it.
A lot of times when you're out there on the field, there's a lot going on the field, and as you talked about that spectacular play you made against the Bengals, every once in a while we daydream, we drift off and look into the stands. Last week, unique situation. You look into the stands, someone has a sign
right
that says, I just finished chemo. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, because I know you think about it, I know you think about your recovery and the tremendous story, but in that moment, what did it mean to you and how did you react to it?
Very special moment. I can, you know, relate firsthand, and that's why I'm thankful for my situation, because I know firsthand what he's going through. And so no matter how big the moment is, how big the stage is, I know my past. And so for me to go over there and take some time out and take a picture with him, sign up football for him, it's priceless. So I know firsthand what he's going through, and that means everything for me to be able to be inspiration for him.
James, we should mention you were diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma back in 2015. Yeah. You are fully healthy now.
Fully healthy.
Fully healthy, and I'm sure
God.
So appreciative. Yes, indeed. Is there a day that goes by that you don't think about that, that you're not, that you don't have to say, oh, I'm so appreciative to be here, and now I'm going to go out and play football? Because I watched so many stories and read so many articles, and what was so important to you is I'm a football player. Right. Like, I wasn't even thinking about saving my life. I was thinking about playing football again. Right. Tell me how you balance the two now.
There's days go by where I think about it, but I'm just always grateful. Some days I'll be on a practice field. I'll just be looking at my helmet and just like, man, I achieved my lifelong dream. Like, I remember being 7 years old thinking, like, what it would be like to play in the NFL. And then for everything it took for me to get there, you know, almost tears start to come down because I'm just so thankful. So, but it's business is business, though. I can't have time to be, you know, soaking it up and being, you know.
Like, right, you're in the moment.
I'm in the moment, so.
And I listen, there's a player in Seattle, Shaq Griffin, that we talked about on the show, that the best part of his story is talking about him not as the guy who made the NFL with only one hand, but as a really good football player.
Right.
A guy. And so, and I know for you, you don't want to be labeled as just part of, a guy that recovered from cancer. However, there's almost at this point a brotherhood, I would imagine, in the NFL of got Eric Berry, Andre Howell for the Texans, who's going through it right now and might play. Texans, another guy, David Quisenberry. Like, do you have any relationship with any of the other guys that have a similar lived experience that is so different, obviously, than an ACL or an Achilles recovery?
For sure. It's definitely a brotherhood. We all know what it's like. Eric Berry, Quisenberry. Those are my guys. EB was the first, and I always say I'm thankful for EB for setting the tone. You know, he was always the first. He was the first one that I knew about, and for him to...
To show everyone it's not a career-ending injury.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, injury's the wrong word, but that it's not it's not just about, you know, will you survive, but you can. He made an all-pro team and got the biggest contract for a safety ever post-cancer, and so it kind of set the tone for organizations as well.
It gives hope. It lets people know out there going through that there's life after their situation, and you use adversity to do something great, and so that's why I'm thankful for the adversity.
All right, James, before we ask you why you're here today, do you have any idea, we don't know either, when Lev Bell might be coming back?
No clue.
No idea.
No clue.
He hasn't spoken to you about that.
Not about that. Not about that.
All right. So tell us why you're here this morning.
Well, just in New York. We got a bye week. We just having fun. And, you know, seeing Times Square. Just some business meetings out here and stuff. Just trying to get stuff done.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, enjoy your time.
We'll
congratulations.
I appreciate you guys.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Looking forward to seeing your career.
No question.
You're going to be a starting running back in the NFL.
All the best to you for the rest of the season.
Appreciate you so much,
James Conner. Much more personal.
Great story.
Coming up on Saturday, number 6, Michigan takes on in-state rival number 24, Michigan State. Then Pac-12 contenders collide. Colorado taking on 15th-ranked Washington. All kicks off Saturday, 11:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Jenna, we're going to the Izzo's to eat pregame, take a private jet. I'm going to give them a pep talk.
Wow. Yeah.
Lupe. We're doing it. We're in there.
I love it.
See, despite being obviously an Ohio State guy, loves Michigan State because of his relationship with the basketball coach, Tom Izzo.
Yes.
And, like, sticking it to Harbaugh in Michigan, best chance he gets.
Izzo is a fan of Chris Carter. And my
Chris Carter
really?
And Steph.
He watches the show.
And now the wife is a fan of Jenna Wolfe.
Who's not a fan of Jenna Wolfe?
Oh, Danny.
Who's here?
Oh, best guest ever.
Canelle, you're leaving me hanging.
Oh, hey, we're going. What's up? How we doing?
How are
Look
you?
Who's
Fantastic.
Here. Fox College football analyst, Danny Canelle.
No,
Danny,
we love having you. The Harbaughs. That's all I need. Don't worry about that. You keep trying to ruin that relationship.
You guys are going to be moving somewhere else.
We're talking about Alabama this morning, Alabama football. They have had as dominant of a 7-week run as we have seen, led by Heisman frontrunner Tua Tagovailoa, who hasn't thrown an interception or a fourth quarter pass this season. Tennessee head coach and former Alabama defensive coordinator Jeremy Pruitt says, quote, this might be the best team Nick Saban has had yet. And that is saying a lot. Danny, can anyone challenge Alabama in their quest for yet another championship at this point with who's out there?
Absolutely. There are several teams that can challenge them. I wouldn't go and pick them and say they're going to swipe that title from them just yet.
You mean
I
think several it's teams you're going to put together like an all-star team?
No.
Clemson D-line. Ohio State's quarterback.
No. Here's the thing, and this is what we do every single year with Bama, and they deserve it because they're a dynasty. They're one of the best college football dynasties we've seen in the history of college football. But we come to this point where we put them on this pedestal where they're unbeatable. And as has proven out in the past, they are beatable. It's been accomplished before. It's a team sport. You have to go out there every single time. They're 18 to 23-year-olds. You don't know if you catch them on an off night. Look, if they played at their peak and they were on, nobody's beating them. But that doesn't happen week in and week out.
True.
That's why every time they take the field, they're favored, and yet they're not undefeated in Nick Saban's tenure. They have been knocked off before, just like they were last year when we were having the same conversation. Is this the best college football team we've ever seen? That was before the Iron Bowl when they got beat by Auburn. So, yes, they're gettable. They're really good. They're the number one team. Without question, they'll be favored in every single game from here on out. But, yes, they can be
beaten. So, who are the teams that you
think? It's a small list. It's
right,
a small
list. I mean, Oklahoma just lost to Texas.
Right.
Georgia just lost to LSU.
It's
Ohio
a small
State
list.
Just lost their best player.
Yep.
So, I mean, who is
but
on
I
the
would
list?
Put Ohio State on there.
Okay.
I would put Clemson on there. I would put Michigan on there. I would put LSU on there because they play in Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
And I would still have Georgia in there. Georgia had a bad game against LSU in Baton Rouge, but they're still a good team. And in college football.
And if they can play them on a neutral site.
Yes, that helps
SEC
tremendously.
SEC champs, okay.
College football is about talent acquisition. And there are only certain rosters that can stack up with Alabama. And even then, when you look at Ohio State, Clemson, they're probably not going to have as much NFL talent. It'll be close. But they can actually go toe-to-toe with them for some point of time. Big part of the question, too, is Tua Tagovailoa. How is his health? Is he 100%? But the one thing I don't know about Tua yet, and we haven't really seen it this year, he hasn't thrown a pass in the fourth quarter. Hasn't been in a pressure situation. Now, he passed that test with flying colors last year when he came in at second half in the national championship game. But this year, we have not seen this team face any stress whatsoever. And I'm kind of anxious to see how they do in that situation. I'm sure they'll be fine, but you never know until you see them do it.
The reason why Jeremy Pruitt's going to say that is Jeremy Pruitt was there. I know Jeremy Pruitt, considered him to be a friend. And at one point, I considered joining the staff at Alabama. So Jeremy was one of the guys I communicated with. And he was on that staff, especially in 2011, when they had all those NFL players playing on that roster. My son was on that roster as a redshirt. So with Tua, though, that defense they have now is not as good as 2011. But Tua makes them play at a different game, Danny. The reason why you could stay in the Alabama game before, because Nick was going to play four corners.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to the Dean Smith. We're going to slow it down because I'm going to overpower you with numbers and force, that offense and defensive line. But now with Tua, man, they're like Vegas. They're like Tark the Shark. They're running up and down. So this is not the Alabama team that I think is easier to upset compared to those other Alabama teams. It's because all those five stars that he has on offense, before he couldn't get them to football. He could only get two or three, those running backs to football. But now, because he's got Tua at quarterback, he can get four or five five-star guys. So now Alabama, this looks like the fastest Alabama team I've ever seen, and it's because of the quarterback and the style for which they play.
So let's talk about Tua for a moment, because what's my favorite Baker Mayfield college stat? He set the all-time passing efficiency record. Then he came back the next year and broke his own record.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tua right now is beating Baker's record by 50 points. Like, Baker's records were like 195 and then 197. Tua's up near 250. When it comes to the Heisman Trophy, I am curious, in your opinion, do we hold against him that they've been so dominant he's not playing in the fourth quarters?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, I think it does hurt him. Because I think there are four things you need to win the Heisman Trophy. I think you have to be a quarterback. Yes, there have been some running backs, but it really helps to be a quarterback.
Right.
You have to be on a national championship contending team. He's got that. You have to put up gaudy statistics. He's got that. You also need a Heisman moment. And you or something there that's special that people remember. And Tua's best moment came last year. I don't think that carries over into this season. And I do think that hurts him. Now, betting favorite, he's heavily favored to win the Heisman. I think ultimately he does because he's going to be that far removed as those statistics show. But if there's somebody close, if there's a Kyler Murray who had several Heisman moments in a loss. That's the only thing with him.
Yeah.
But if he comes back and has a redemption moment against a Texas in a rematch in a Big 12 championship game, Kyler Murray could steal it from him. Dwayne Haskins could potentially steal from him at Ohio State. If he has several moments that people that resonate with the voters, I think that could hurt Tua for sure.
You worry about his knee at all?
Yeah, I mean, when I saw him running around this past week and it wasn't a contact issue and he just looked off and it looked like it was bothering him, yes, there's concern. But I'm not concerned until I see him out for multiple games. Like, I think if you're the safe play, you don't face, you know, you have a couple weeks until you face LSU. You're going to take it really conservatively if you're Nick Saban with the approach. Because of what you said, this is by far the best offense that Nick Saban has had in his tenure because he no longer has a game manager at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He has a difference maker. He has a number one overall NFL talent at playing the quarterback position, and that's something we have never seen at Alabama.
No, we see Alabama very often, number one in the nation points per game, number one in the nation yards per game defensively.
Right.
But those are their offensive numbers this year. Just real quick, circle back when you were listing the teams. You didn't say Notre Dame. Was that just they didn't come to mind?
No, they didn't come to mind because I would absolutely put them in
Notre Dame.
I think there's like six or seven teams that are there, and the crazy thing about it, in those six or seven teams, Clemson, Ohio State included, Alabama is at least a 10-point favorite and maybe a 2-touchdown favorite. But you still have to go out there and play the games.
All right, Danny, stick around. Coming up on the other side, can Josh Rosen shock the Broncos on Thursday Night Football? Thursday Night Football returns tonight as Von Miller and the Broncos battle Josh Rosen and the Cardinals. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox.
I had a couple friends like the British accent.
The NFL Network can stream it on Prime Video, which you can see every Thursday night. Fox Thursday Night Football. Danny Canal still here. We're sticking with tonight's game. Josh Rosen has looked every bit of a rookie so far this season, completing just 55% of his passes and throwing just 2 touchdowns in his first 3 career starts. But despite the tough start, Rosen says he's enjoying the process.
I feel a very strong support system from the Arizona Cardinals since the day I got here, and I've actually probably played more loose and freely here than I have in my couple years at UCLA, because at UCLA, since there's so much weighing on each game, it's almost like you really don't want to turn the ball over, you really don't want to do this, because if you lose that game. I've played pretty dang freely here. I think I've been given the freedom to play the ball that I know how. And I'm very thankful for that.
What did you guys think of that comment? That there's, because I think his point is, in college football, you lose a game, your national championship aspirations can be over.
Of course, with the Cardinals, it doesn't matter. Well, the Cardinals, so lose a couple games here and there.
I don't think that's what he means.
No,
but like, I mean, the NFL, you're a great team. Is going to lose 4 times all year. Like, do you think that's the right mentality to have?
I think he's got to be a little bit careful with his comments because you can't ever get loose and careless with the football, no matter where you're playing, no matter how much each loss counts. Because, I mean, it's statistically, it's been shown if you turn the ball over, your chances of winning go down, you know, dramatically. So he does have to be careful with it. You know, I think, I mean, hey, it's a lot more fun, a lot more loose when you're getting paid to do what you're doing, which I think is a difference for him, too.
Right. I think it's different, too, when you have someone like the Bidwell family. And they draft you as a high draft pick. I think it's also someone like Steve Keim. I know Steve Keim, the general manager, and I know the way Steve is very personable and hands-on. And I know he let this kid know, you're my quarterback. Like, you're the quarterback that I drafted. You are the future of this franchise. And I know personally through guys like Larry Fitzgerald and even Sam Bradford, they have great leadership there in that locker room. So I could understand, because now people thought that he was a leader, thought he was outspoken. He got to the NFL and realized, hey, you know something? I ain't no leader of grown men. Larry Fitzgerald is a real leader of grown men. So they've empowered him just to learn the offense. You're going to be here. We're not going to pull you out. We're not going to snatch you out. So I can understand his comments and the way that he distributed them. And also, when you talk about being loose, anytime a quarterback says that and you have any turnovers, they're going to correlate the two together.
And at UCLA, he was constantly under-delivering because the bar was set so high. The expectations were, hey, he's going to be a first-round pick. Therefore, he should lead UCLA to the playoffs, even though his roster around him was not very good. Now he's out there in Arizona. It's not the crucible that Sam Darnold's on in New York. It's not the spotlight
in
Cleveland as the number one overall pick in Baker Mayfield. So it is pretty loose. The expectations are low, and he's out there playing relaxed.
All the rookie quarterbacks have had sort of different approaches to the season so far, depending on which organization that has drafted them, between Baker and Sam and Rose and Josh Allen, even Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. which rookie quarterback has impressed you the most so far this young season?
I think there are two that have separated themselves from the rest, and it's Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, and I don't think anybody would argue that point. And I really want to be careful because I think we as a society, and especially in our business, we have a tendency to have a recency bias. And last game out, you saw Darnold play pretty well, and you saw Baker Mayfield have his roughest game versus a very good Chargers team. But even with that being said, I think when you look at the body of work, I think Sam Darnold has been the most impressive so far. And it's not because the statistics are better, because he's got 9 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He's got a better completion percentage. He's got a better quarterback rating. To me, I was so concerned about Sam Darnold because of the roster that he was inheriting, because of the lack of talent out there.
And how would they play? How would they support him?
Absolutely. And he has been able to raise the level of play of the guys around him and actually make this team relevant, which is something I would not have said going into the season. So Sam Darnold, to me, has been the biggest upside surprise of these rookie quarterbacks, because I thought Baker Mayfield was going to be good.
We saw his first pass of his career goes pick six, and then he plays brilliantly the rest of that Monday night football game. Next two games were tough for him, and he's played really well, I think, since then. And the Jets all of a sudden are surprising 3-3 on the year, a team that is alive in that AFC wildcard battle. Baker's a guy who I think has played better than his numbers say. A 72 passer rating in 2018, that's like a 52 passer rating in 2008. Like, everybody's got a 90-plus passer rating. Mm-hmm. Baker's thrown more picks than touchdowns. I still, when I watch him play, and I watch the Browns a lot, it feels like every quarter he makes a couple elite-level throws, elite plays that make me say, okay, once the game slows down for him a bit, and that's a team that we thought was going to have more firepower on the outside than they did. Like, we go into the year, it's like, okay, so they've got Gordon, Callaway, Jarvis. Now it's really just Jarvis as a guy you can rely on. Even Jarvis Landry's having a year that he's not happy with at this point. So I haven't been discouraged by Baker, even though the numbers haven't been good. Are you in the same place?
No, I feel very confident with Baker Mayfield moving forward. I think you see some of the intangibles that you can't measure at the combine. You see a guy who's late in the game versus the Ravens can find a way. You okay?
Yes.
Good, all right, good. You can find a way to make a play against the Ravens and lead a drive down the field. When things are breaking down all around you, you can get outside. The one thing where, and I think you hit on this, and I think you'll see him absolutely improve in this area. We saw one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the history of college football. He was, except until now, Tua, but never threw the ball up for grabs. Didn't have a lot of turnovers. I think you'll get him back to that trend the more comfortable he gets with the system. Mm-hmm. And you have to remember, Darnold has 2 extra games. With rookies where they've played such a small body of work, that is a lot of reps and snaps and defenses that he's seen. Baker will catch up. He'll
get more comfortable. Darnold's had 3 extra games as preparing for the starter.
Exactly.
Because in one of Baker's games, he was inserted it right before the half because Tyrod got injured and wasn't playing well. So he's had almost double the time as far as prep. And Baker didn't have a preseason preparing as the starter. Darnold wasn't anointed the starter, but they clearly wanted him to be the starter.
What has surprised you the most with these rookie quarterbacks this season? Negative or positive?
Darnold would be the positive for me because I did not see the Jets being a 500 team now. I thought the AFC East was going to be the worst division in football. Maybe it still is, but I did not see them getting their record up to where they were. But when you ask about all of them, you're getting kind of what you expect. You see some flashes of brilliance, and then you see some really bad boneheaded plays. And I think you've seen more flashes of brilliance from Darnold and less boneheaded plays, even though there have been, than guys like Rosen and Josh Allen, who now is hurt. And I think the same thing could be said for Baker Mayfield. You've seen bigger upside moments where, and more consistently you've seen them. And I think that's why I'm more excited about those two guys than Rosen and Josh Allen. Because I think it's very, I think we have to be careful in saying, hey, this class is the best since the class of 83. This is going to be a historic quarterback class. Because of the way that the NFL is played now, it is easier to play the quarterback position than it has ever been. You're seeing the most yards per game in the history of the game. You're seeing the most touchdown passes thrown. The quarterback ratings are off the charts. And I think it's going to take us some time to evaluate that and say, all right, how does this class really stack up to the greatest of all times?
A little quick thing. Haskins at Ohio State. With the quarterback position being easier in the pros, do you come out after your sophomore season?
If your evaluation is up there and your top 10 picks would pick what I think it will be, I think you absolutely come out. And I have changed so much in this regard because there's so much money at stake. It has to be a business decision. You've got to look at it and say, all right, this is $25 million guaranteed. Yeah, maybe I could use a little bit of development in college, but I should be able to go. And I think the NCAA, because there's such a groundswell movement to pay the players. I think the simple solution to this is let the players go when they're ready. Like, take the restrictions off. Maybe make it 2 years if you go to a two and done, but let them go as opposed to restricting them every year and they're complaining and they're leaving the season early. You've got to reevaluate when guys can go pro.
All right, Danny, well, thanks so much for being with us today.
He unloaded the whole thing.
There we go.
Awesome. I can't have him for no segment.
I'll bring some new shoes next time, too.
Oh, no, I bet you will.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.